The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Barack Obama Recalls Bringing Holiday Magic to All at the White House. When a young, charismatic Illinois state senator gave the keynote address at the 2004 Democratic National Convention, the nation's ideas about what a U.S. president could look like began to shift. But as Barack Obama recounts in A Promised Land, his historic two terms in office were hard fought. Here, he shares more about his 8 years in the White House, including how personalized the Oval House and why it was important for Michelle Obama to uplift the holiday spirit at the White House. The enthusiasm during your first term in office was in large part created by the hopeful messaging of your campaign. In your recent memoir, you expound on the challenges that could have dampened that hope. How did you maintain your optimism when it seemed, at times, that the world was against you? President Barack Obama replied, "Well, my name's Barack Hussein Obama, and I made it to the White House. So I have always been able to maintain a good sense of optimism. What I know is that Americans are fundamentally good and generous. I have read thousands of personal letters from them, and I have found that as long as I can keep their stories in mind, I stay pretty centered. My time in the White House reminded me of something I had known about myself for years. I often felt the steadiest when things were going to hell. So setbacks, like losing in New Hampshire in the primary, losing a Senate seat during the push for health care reform, or any of the many, many potholes we encountered, didn't shake my faith in what was still possible. Reading your book and hearing about the nuanced thought that goes into, quote unquote, high stakes decision making, one saying comes to mind, the devil is in the details. When did you find your rhythm when it came to problem solving? President Obama replied, I was always aware of the weight of the job. Sometimes it was a little heavier, like when I first took office and hundreds of thousands of Americans were losing their jobs every month, or when I was making decisions about whether to send young men and women to war. When you are the President of the United States, no decision comes to your desk that's not 50-50. With real consequences on either side. But if you surround yourself with the right people, experts, scientists, people who believe in public service and think government can do some good, at least you know those decisions can be made in good faith. As far as finding a rhythm to the job, it wasn't really until we were out of the woods on the economic crisis. And maybe not until my second term that I really felt like I was in the zone and I had found my game as president. I got a taste of what it might have felt like to be Michael Jordan in Game 7. My basketball game never quite gave me that feeling. Why is it so important to tell your own story about your two terms as president? Well, I have tried to provide an honest accounting of my time in office. Everything from the key events to the political, economic, and cultural forces that shaped them. I have tried to be clear-eyed in my take on what I got right and the mistakes I made. And I have tried to give readers a sense of the personal journey that Michelle and I went through during those years, with all the incredible highs and lows. Even if my presidency didn't usher in a post-racial America, something you never heard me say or my staff say, by the way, maybe young people across the country saw themselves differently, their own possibilities expanded, and I hope they read this and see reasons to dive in, to be optimistic, and to believe they can make a difference. Because they can, they really can. After all the pomp and circumstance of the first inauguration and settling your family into the White House, what was the first thing you did in the Oval Office as far as making it yours? President Obama replied, "You know, I had never actually been inside the Oval Office before I was elected president. It is smaller than you might think, but its tall ceilings and breathtaking lighting give it a grand feeling that matches up with the historic photos and news reels. So much in there I had never wanted to touch or make my own. The Resolute desk, Washington's portrait above the fireplace, and Remington's famous bronze cowboy. But there were a few flourishes I did add. An original program from the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, and a bronze bust of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that I had moved from the White House library into the Oval. There is an adjoining dining room and study that I filled with my mementos I'd gathered over the years. A framed Life magazine cover of the Selma March, signed by John Lewis, a brick from Abraham Lincoln's law office in Springfield, a pair of boxing gloves from Muhammad Ali, and Ted Kennedy's painting of the Cape Cod coastline, which he had sent to me as a gift after I had admired it in his office. But because we were in the middle of a historic recession when I entered the office, we didn't want to do any major redecorating or change the furniture at a time when so many Americans were struggling. I spent most of the 8 years in the Oval Office listening to intelligence reports, hosting heads of state, cajoling members of Congress, and posing for pictures. I laughed, cursed, and more than once fought back tears in that room. I grew comfortable enough to put my feet up or sit on the desk or steal a nap on the couch. But I never fully rid myself of the sense of reverence I felt whenever I walked into the Oval Office. The holidays and many officials are advising families to use caution as they gather for the holidays. But in your years at the White House, what was the moment you loved sharing with the people as president during this time? Well, the holidays were wonderful at the White House. The whole place smelled like a Christmas tree farm, from the East Wing to the residence to the West Wing. The decorations adorned the trees, halls, and grand foyer. The Rose Garden was strewn with lights. The White House pastry chefs prepared an elaborate gingerbread replica of the residence, complete with furniture, curtains, and miniature versions of our dogs, Beau and Sunny. They even made Bo and Sunny cookies, which were very popular with guests, but I couldn't bring myself to eat them. Michelle worked hard to make sure as many Americans as possible could get in and experience their White House all year round, but especially when it was all decked out for the holidays. So the number of people walking through the halls each day dramatically increased for a few weeks. That was always fun. Of course, with the pandemic, the holidays will be a little different for everybody. So I hope everybody listens to public health officials and abides by guidelines that keep everybody safe. That way we can make sure a lot of people will be able to celebrate the holidays together next year and beyond. And I hope we all keep in mind this holiday season that with the economic downturn, so many of our fellow Americans are struggling, and those of us who can do our part to extend a hand to people who need some extra help. The next article is titled, Yearly Departed is the Perfect Way to Say Goodbye to 2020. I bet we are all laughing at the version of ourselves who, 365 days ago, said 2020 was going to be our year. Boy, were we so wrong. Before the ball drops to usher in 2021, which hopefully isn't so cruel, there is no better way to communicate than with Amazon Prime Video's new comedy special, Yearly Departed. This series eulogizes for the year 2020, say goodbye to the things we lost in this tragic year, like the expectation of wearing pants, casual sex, band-aids. Yes, it is as funny as it sounds. The lineup of superstar comedians includes well-known names like Tiffany Haddish, two dope queens Phenom, Phoebe Robinson, and TV writer Ziwi Fumado, all dressed in their finest black attire to lay an insufferable year to rest. All were hilarious additions to this episode. The 43-minute special doesn't apologize for its setup and more than makes up for it with a tongue-in-cheek approach to 2020's A Long-Awaited Funeral. Essence spoke exclusively to Ziwi about her eulogy for beige band-aids, a very direct swipe at corporate America's sudden attempts at being more inclusive. I did not realize that band-aids were supposed to be discreet and invisible, so it was absolutely shocking to me learning that they were going to make band-aids in brown colors, she jokes. I have existed on this earth for several decades, even though I identify as 19 and didn't realize bras were supposed to be a certain color or that my foundation should match my face. I think we can all relate to these issues that we didn't know we were being left out of until very recently. Ziwi says she can't confirm or deny whether the corporate push to release more products catered to brown girls is genuine or performative, but says it is at the very least convenient that 2020 is the year we decided that brown people existed. Ziwi, who has written for comedic acts like Desi and Mero, Robin Thede, and Stephen Colbert, will soon be stepping into the spotlight for her very own Showtime variety series in 2021. The timing has never been better for the world to get a glimpse of what this quirky genius has to offer as she joins a slate of up-and-coming black female comedians knocking down doors in Hollywood. In fact, Ziwi got a chance to work with the ones she admired for Yearly Departed. Tiffany Haddish has this electric energy that makes you laugh, says Zeewee. It made me think, how do I emulate? It is interesting to see her change the chemistry in the room just by being herself. All of the women in this project has these unique and strong abilities, and I was so fortunate to be able to collaborate with them. Yearly Departed is now streaming on Amazon Prime Video, just in time for you to say your last words to one hellish year. The next article is titled, Every Performance We Love on Screen in 2020. For Black women in Hollywood this year, we might have seen many of their great performances on the big screen, but that didn't stop their work from being impactful. For Black women in Hollywood this year, we might not have seen many of their great performances on the big screen, but that didn't stop their work from being impactful. Take, for instance, Nicole Beharie as a former beauty queen, desperate for her daughter to break their family's generational cycle in Miss Juneteenth. Or Kiki Layne as a soldier turned reluctant mercenary in Gina Prince By the Woods, The Old Guard. Both projects and a few others played in limited theaters as well as on demand as many studios and streaming services adjusted their releases due to the pandemic. Then there were the regularly scheduled small screen gifts from Kerry Washington in Little Fires Everywhere, Journey Smollett in Lovecraft Country, and all of the ladies down at the Pink in P-Valley. We revisited these flawed, funny, fearless, and fierce characters week after week. Thankfully, they kept us sane with good TV as we did our part staying indoors. Regardless of how the films were consumed, or if we binged an entire series in one night, we were enthralled by these performances. A look back at the best actresses we loved on any screen this year. Number 1, Pearl and Queen Sono. Netflix's first original African series, Queen Sono, tells the story of an unconventional spy with a mysterious past who works for an undercover South African agency devoted to protecting the people of Africa, and who just might be the superhero of our dreams. This action-packed thriller, and yes, there is a lot of glorious ass-kicking, was created and produced with an entirely South African cast and all African crew. Number 2, Shante Adams in the Photograph. The film, written and directed by Stella Maggie, stars Issa Rae as May, an art curator who falls in love with a journalist played by Lakeith Stanfield, who's writing a story about her estranged mother, a photographer. The photograph also stars Little Rel Howery, Tiana Paris, Kelvin Harrison Jr., Ian Noel, and Shante Adams, whose turn as Issa's on-screen mother moved us to tears, literally. Number 3, Zoe Kravitz in High Fidelity. There was a moment in late February when I found myself watching Hulu's High Fidelity on a loop. I had begun with wanting to be as cool as Rob, played by Zoe Kravitz, the hopelessly heartbroken romantic who did lose a real good thing with Mac. On my second binge, I'd be cheering for Charisse to be seen for the badass rock star that she is by everybody. For the third time, I'm watching for the fellas. Kingsley, Rainbow, Son Franks, and my new white boy crush, Jake Lacey. Number 4, Kerry Washington and Lexi Underwood and Little Fires Everywhere. The series features a plethora of characters and as many intertwined storylines, and while the on-screen tension between Kerry Washington and Reese Witherspoon can cause shivers. Lexi Underwood scenes with Washington, who portrays her mother, Mia, escalate from tender to explosive in record time, and then back again. Number 5. Jonica T. Gibbs in 20s. Lena Waif brought BET its first show with an LGBTQ lead, loosely based on Waif's own start in the entertainment industry. 20s follows Hattie, a queer black woman, and her two straight friends, Mary and Nia, as they chase their dreams in Los Angeles during their 20s. Number 6. Niecy Nash in Uncorked. In Uncorked, Niecy Nash's best scenes are the ones where she's with her on-screen husband, although Courtney B. Vance is best known for bringing a dignified performance to any drama project. He keeps up with Nash's refined comedy chops in Uncorked. These two powerhouses deliver. Nash said it's because they both came, leaving their egos at the door. Number 7. Anjanae Ellis and the Clark Sisters, the First Ladies of Gospel. If there was one thing the Saints could agree on after watching the Clark Sisters, was that Anjanae Ellis played the heaven out of the role of Dr. Maddie Moss Clark. Number 8. Lovie Simone in Cella and the Spades. For audiences who have loved Lovie Simone's range as troubled preacher's kid Zora on OWN's hit megachurch drama Greenleaf, they will see Simone at her best in Cella and Spades, as her character's reign gets undermined by enemy factions and her own insecurities. Number 9. Issa Rae in The Lovebirds. What sets up the hilarious film in which Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani not only star but executive produce is that the two get kind of sort of framed for murder and spend the next hour or so trying to find who done it so they can convince the cops that they didn't actually do it. Because what cop would readily believe a black woman and her Asian boyfriend in New Orleans, no less? The adventure they embark on to clear their names almost makes you forget that you're Netflix and chilling with a multiracial couple, a rare occurrence in Hollywood, no matter how much we try to normalize it, because it should be normal. Number 10. Issa Rae and Yvonne Orji in Insecure. Insecure showrunner Prentice Penny revealed via Twitter that Issa Rae and Molly's friendship is an integral part of the show because they need each other. He also reminds us that, like every friendship, they have experienced challenges as a natural side effect of growing older and wiser. Even though I assumed Insecure's finale was going to be laser focused on Issa and Lawrence 2.0 and their potential future together, I'm happy it instead turned our attention back to the unique bond between black female friendships, because we need each other. The next article is titled New Year, New Love, Rotimi and Vanessa MD Are Engaged. Rotimi and Vanessa MD are living proof that manifestation is real when it comes to love. After praying to find his wife in 2015, the power star has successfully put a ring on his future, quote-unquote, Mrs. Butterscotch. Rotimi recently shared the news that he proposed to his girlfriend Vanessa MD with a dazzling ring fit for a queen. In the Instagram post, he also reveals that his relationship is one that he prayed for years ago. She said, yes, he writes, you are my everything, my angel. In 2015, I prayed that whoever my wife was going to be and wherever she was at the moment, I hoped that she was happy, having a good day, and receiving God's abundance. He continues, fast forward, you make me such a better man. I'm in debt to God for you. I will pay him back by loving you and giving you everything that you deserve. Rotimi also shared a video of himself surprising MD with the ring. It appears his surprise went off without a hitch as the ecstatic bride jumped for joy. MD also shared her excitement on social media, revealing people initially doubted her when she said she knew Rotimi was her husband after only a few weeks of dating. A year and a half ago, the world laughed at me when I said, I knew you were my husband, only days after spending time with you. I didn't blame them. After all, it's an uncommon and inexplicable feeling when you meet your soulmate. You saved my life in ways only a man appointed and anointed by God could, the Tanzanian artist writes to her husband-to-be. There are no words to describe the power of surrendering to God and, in this case, to love. God is love. I spent my whole life searching for joy and peace in things and places that couldn't offer anything but a temporary high. With your love, I bask in abundance for everything I did right. God bless me with you. Rotimi and MD recently spoke to Essence about their love story, which first began at Essence Festival. Shortly after they began dating, MD relocated from Africa to Atlanta to live with Rotimi. I feel like we have been together for lifetimes, Rotimi said of their bond. So, this is just this body, and I just met her again on this earth. It felt like that from day one, and I have never had a connection that instantly. I don't want you to go back to Africa. I want you to stay with me. Congratulations to the happy couple. The next article is titled, Feel the Love. The celebs who got engaged or married in 2020. Here's a look at the couples who got married or engaged in 2020. Melanie Fiona. Singer Melanie Fiona is officially a married woman after having to postpone her wedding plans 3 times due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Fiona finally made it to the altar with her love, American Idol Season 6 contestant and fellow singer Jared Cotter. Danielle Brooks. The Orange is the New Black star kicked off 2020 with big news. She and long-term love Dennis got engaged and shared the love via Instagram. I never thought one of the best days of my year would happen the last week of the year, she wrote. I got to marry my best friend. We are engaged. So excited to become your wife. D&D until the end. Run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.